Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your K-Pro Sarah Cody. We're keeping it geekly with our returning guest, Chris O'Hara. We're here to break down everything about Bent Box Comics and Artificial. Chris, how have you been? Welcome back to the stream, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And once again, I said this last time, I don't know how you get all that out in one take. It's very impressive. But it's been great.
I thought I was going to lose it. I thought I was going to lose it. It was like doing a little grind on Tony Hawk. And I was like
wobbling a little bit.
So, Chris, you know, you've been on the show before. You know, what's been up since you last been on? How's things been going? You're running a Kickstarter now that has successfully funded. Congratulations on that, man.
Yeah. So that's been pretty much it. It's been a grind on the Kickstarter. We finished the comic probably a little bit after my first interview with you. So we finished the comic completed and we're running through all the different versions we want and alternate covers. And then we spent about a good month and a half, I think, working on the Kickstarter, making sure it was good to go, and then launched it February 1st. So we're about halfway through. But it's been fun, but busy, very busy.
So for anyone that is watching for the first time, can you give us a little bit about who you are and Bent Box Comics as well?
Yeah, my name is Chris O'Hara. I am the lead writer for Bent Box Comics. It's kind of a independent comic publisher that I founded. We are out of Southwest Florida. I have a decent amount of background with comics, but this is our first venture into actually creating one. I wrote the whole thing. I'm a couple issues in, but we just were able to get the Kickstarter obviously started and funded. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, even though you already mentioned it. So right now I'm just my active role is Kickstarter monitor, just kind of making sure everything's running smoothly and I can interact with people. And that's what I'm doing right now.
So how's the Kickstarter been for you? Has this been your first Kickstarter?
Yeah, this is my first one. I've been on Kickstarter forever. So I've backed, I think you can go to my profile and see, I think it's 25, 30 projects, primarily, I think a handful of comics, primarily like board games. We're a big board game family. So
really,
every time I see something like kind of quirky or cool or new, I try and snag it on Kickstarter.
What's been a new board game that you've been recently playing that I should pick up with for the family?
Oh man, you know, I'm in my office.
Ooh, okay, hold up. Let me switch you over to a different scene so we can get a big look at it.
Oh, I don't know if you want my whole scene. But I have this massive case full of board games. The Binding of Isaac board game. I don't know if you ever played it, or card game technically. Are you familiar with the video game?
Yes, Binding the game of Isaac? The game is awesome.
Yeah, if you like the game, highly recommend the card game. I think it was one of the top earning Kickstarters for a long time until like Vox Machina came out, like Critical Role. Other than that, I think it was like one of the top earners, but it's a fantastic game.
Dude, that'd Bloodborne and Dark Souls has board games too, and they look phenomenal.
Yeah, I've played the Bloodborne one. It's awesome, obviously. and then I backed one that was like $500. It was called Death May Die. I think
you are
that's what it's called.
A board game enthusiast.
Yeah, it's a Cthulhu one, and it comes with like this massive Cthulhu, and then he has all of his monsters, and it's awesome. So anyway, yeah, I'm big into board games, but also into comics.
You know, that reminds me, man, being a kid, seeing all those cool commercials, like the rat cheese. I forgot what it was, but I know you dropped the basket. Mousetrap. We were a family. We never could get it. I always wanted to get it. And anytime I see board games with pieces like those, it's awesome. It's like
brings
reminiscent.
You back, man.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, with Artificial, this was such an awesome read. I had the opportunity to read it before you completely finished it, but to have a good enough idea of what was going on. Can you give us an idea and concept of what this comic is about? It's such a unique concept, and I loved it. I thought it was beautiful.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear it. So Artificial, it follows... Well, we'll start with basically this issue one. Issue one follows Vincent Van Gogh, who I'm sure 99% of everyone's familiar with, a classical artist. The beginning follows him through his day-to-day life, as many are familiar, or at least should be in some aspect. He was not understood in his time. Mm-hmm. He was depressed. There's signs that he actually was eating lead paint, and there was like mental illness that was creeping in. There's a lot. I did a huge dive on Vincent van Gogh just to prep for this, the writing of this. But it follows his kind of last days. In real life, he killed himself. I don't know if everyone knows that, but in real life, he murdered, or he committed suicide. And so this follows kind of the path of him going to that, and then something else happens. So that's a little bit of a teaser, but the basic premise is AI rules the world. Now, I know that you said it's a unique premise. That's not the most unique premise, but the catalyst for this story was with the rise of AI art, ChatGPT, all these new AI tools that are coming about. It was more of a, not like a railing against it as much as just what it probably will happen.
We've all seen Terminator.
Yeah, I mean, Skynet's 5 years away, and we all know
it's real. There's an actual Skynet out there.
And they just created a robot that is just like T2, the one that like can just go right through bars and then recollect itself. So we're all dead in 5 years, and it's fine. It's
like, you guys never watched any of those movies? Like,
No. You know, do some research, guys. But so that's kind of the premise, is it's way in the future. AI has kind of ruled the world. It all started when we started losing our creativity. We everything we did was through robots, through AI. Us ourselves lost connection with our creative abilities and desires and dreams. And that led us to just become drones. And so a mysterious force pulls three classical artists from the past to fight against our AI overlords. That's your little elevator pitch. That was a long elevator pitch, but still.
We have a two geeks talking media. Well, there's the bingo on my apocalypse bingo card. To be frank with you, this year has been crazy. Ohio had that train derail. I live 3 hours away from that.
I don't even know if we're allowed to talk about it. That's the crazier part.
Crazy. Journalists are getting arrested, but Ohio resource thing put out like 3,500 fish have died so far.
The majority of my family live on the border of Pennsylvania and Ohio. I need to contact them, but I don't know. It's been 2023. Well,
Mythical logical creature from the Philippines was reportedly rumored sighted, and I was like scrolling Twitter. I'm like, okay, yeah, Google it. Shit, this is like, there's like official like sites are reporting this, like UFOs, like happened.
I'm not surprised by anything anymore. Unfortunately, I guess I don't know, but yeah, 2023 was like 2022. Hold my beer.
We thought that was the worst.
We're going to keep ramping. We're not stopping.
So when I was saying I thought this was a really interesting concept, it wasn't necessarily the evilness of AI. It was like how you implemented it. I thought that was just that was the big mind blow for me. And I, you know, outside of that, too, that, you know, your writing was just superb, but the art in this, so gorgeous, too. Can we give another shout out to the creative team as well?
Yeah. So I'm the writer, obviously. My main artist is Gabriel Fonseca. He's from Brazil. Highly recommend checking him out. I kind of raved about him on the last time I was here, and it's funny, he watched it and he goes, you talked about me too much. Just shy. Yeah, he's just shy, but otherwise I wanted him to come on because I wanted him to talk about it with you guys or with us. But you know, I love the guy to death. He's an incredible artist, very unique art style. He actually told me that he kind of subcontracted, I guess you want to call it subcontracting, one of his good buddies to do the flatting for the art. So he did the flatting for the colors. His name's Barlow. Can't remember his last name, but I do want to give him a shout out. So he did the flats. Otherwise, it's just us two. So it was a very small team. He did the art, lettering, everything.
So out of all the artists out there, you know, why pick this artist in particular?
So, and Two Geeks, I think I did on Two Geeks. Sorry, I've done a couple of these already. I can't remember who I talked to about everything. But I think on Two Geeks, I talked about the fact that I was scrolling through as many. I was, you know, obviously like on the prowl I'm looking for all different types of artists.
So you had like the concept already and you were looking for your main protagonist?
100%. I knew exactly what I wanted. I didn't know the art style I wanted per se. I just knew it needed to be original. It needed to be different. It couldn't, mm-hmm. No offense to all the purists out there. I didn't want it to be comic book art style. I wanted it to be as unique as possible to kind of give that feeling of handmade and as far away from AI as possible. I really wanted just human creativity to take center stage in the comic. So I'm looking everywhere and I actually filter by like least amount of followers. I go, who's not doing nothing? Like no one even knows they exist. I was like, mm-hmm. No offense, Gabriel. But I was like, who's just out there just grinding with nothing really going on too much? And so I'm looking through a lot of them and I find this guy. And first off, I only saw a handful of different things, like a Spider-Man, mm-hmm. Ninja Turtles, a couple different concept art he did. And then I found one area where he did a couple comic book panels. I was like, okay, he's got it. I was like, he can do it. I see it. And his art style is unique. Let me reach out. He reached out and he said, yeah, I'd be down to do it. And it's been a happy marriage ever since. To the point where I told him, I said, you're not allowed to work for anyone else. I was like, I want you. You are Bent Box Comics. You are our artist now. Just because I love his stuff so much.
And he actually implemented some interesting changes too within the book, right? Some of his direction.
Dude, that's one thing that I'm so happy I did. Because as the writer, obviously, you can go two routes. You can go, hey, bro, I wrote these words. You artist, make the art happen the way I wrote it, okay? That's your job. You know, you can go that route, or you can go, I give you free creative reign. I was like, here's what I wrote. Panel 2 might not even need to be there. Panel 3 isn't there, but we could put it there. You know what I mean? There was mm-hmm. tons of different things where I told him, have creative freedom. And if you, his knowledge of comic books is overwhelming. He just knows everything. Like I have you can barely see it, but I have a wall full of comic books right here. You know, you can barely even see it. And I had a meeting with him and he goes, oh, that's Batman number blah, 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 blah. And he's like, the artist, I really love the art. And he just goes into it. He knows mm-hmm. everything. And that is why I trusted him wholesale on like, do you think the direction of this page is correct? And he'll be like, well, I think maybe we could turn it into a day and night scene instead of just a day. And that's,
I remember that. I remember that talk.
So it's so cool. Working with him, and that was the most fun part of like, not a lot of it was in meetings. It was just like, okay, here's, you know, he would text me, I'm working on pages 14, 15, 16 today. I was like, sweet, can't wait to see it. And I literally can't wait to see it because I know it's not going to really be what I wrote. Mm-hmm. It'll be to an extent, but like the amount that he attributes to it or contributes to it is phenomenal. And he's made it only better, 100%.
You know, I agree with you, too. I think, you know, when we were talking last time and reading through this, you know, he replicated a lot of Van Gogh's art, like, within his own interiors. Like, so it's like art within artception, if you will. I don't know if that's a coin term yet, but you heard it here first.
It is now.
And it was just so mind-blowing. Another thing that I picked up a second time reading through, too, is, like, the atmosphere, the feeling of the comic. In the beginning compared to the second half, it's like it's so much warmer, so much like more like, you know, like sunshine invoking, like you get that.
Yeah.
You know, it's been winter in Ohio for so long and we had 60 degree weather yesterday. And I like was outside just a shirt and I'm like, this is life. And that's how that comic felt, like the embodiment of that. And then just the second half of it is so dark and bleak. And it's like it's like an eeriness, like a bleak, like desolated feeling. I loved was that like intentional?
Yeah, I mean we definitely wanted a first half and a second half. We wanted a split, and I mean I think we hit it pretty hard. And then the other thing was the balance of, I mean, the beginning, it's kind of like vibrant and feels real, and mm-hmm. and I wanted and then once again there wasn't a ton of dialogue in the beginning because there's no need for it. Which is awkward writing, right? Because I'm really just writing descriptions. I'm writing scenes, almost like a movie director. Because to the point where, you know, Vincent Van Gogh wasn't a talkative guy. He didn't talk to all of his neighbors. He was a recluse, especially towards the end. So a lot of it just shows how he was really just getting towards the end of his life and just mm-hmm. of what he wanted to do here. He was ready for a way out. So that was the beginning, but I still wanted to give it a lot of life and different characters and townsfolk and everything. So we made it feel really lived in, basically, the first half. And then the second half, yeah, it kicks off, and it's definitely, it kicks off hard, and it's basically one giant chase scene for the rest of the book. Because I wanted to give it a lot of action, but also give it the feel that it's Vincent Van Gogh. You know, it's not, he's not ready to take on the whole AI construct yet. He's basically, his will to live has been challenged. Let's see what happens. So that was the fun part about it. But I will say that the only other part where we were like, well, I'm not really sure how to do this, and I think you touched on it last time, is that the second half is more vibrant in color. And it was something that we had to try, and we were basically tiptoeing the idea of there's no creative liberties in this future. Everything's white and black. Mm-hmm. Everything's, you know, robotic. There's no free will, no choice anymore. But I didn't want it to look boring, you know. So we had to toe that line, and the way Gabriel did it is phenomenal because it still looks gorgeous.
No, absolutely. Yep. I think right now would be a perfect segue. Let's go ahead and check out the Kickstarter. We have a lot of interiors that we can look at, some new covers, and of course the rewards too. So let's go ahead and see what you're campaigning for today. We are looking at Artificial Issue 1, a 32-page sci-fi action comedy. When humanity succumbs to its creation, an unlikely trio will be called from the past to fight against our future soulless overlords. Currently at $698 of a $500 goal with 33 backers and 15 days left to go. Congratulations on funding once again, man. How are you feeling at this point?
Thanks. Pretty good. It was awesome to obviously get funded. There's still, you know, we put a lot of work and effort into the stretch goals and stuff like that. So there's definitely a feeling of like, let's just, you know, I mean, I would love to do the poppers right now, but at the same time, let's just keep, we got 15 days. Let's do more.
Halfway through. You can't celebrate yet. So we've kind of already gone through the story, but what I would like to do is check out some of these interiors a little bit more in depth. I think we checked out some interiors before, but there are some new ones. And of course, we have our other two of the trio right here, too. So give us a little bit about the other two characters.
So Marie Cassatt is an American painter that was kind of a contemporary of Vincent Van Gogh, not necessarily directly like in his inner circles or anything like that, but lived around a very similar time frame. She would have been familiar with Vincent Van Gogh's work. So I was looking through different people I could bring on, you know, different like a protagonist I could bring on. And I really liked all of her quotes, a lot of her paintings. She's definitely more of a realist when it comes to painting, to her artwork. So anyway, I picked her, and she's been really fun to write. Not gonna lie, she's kind of my favorite to write right now. And then Leo, everyone knows Leo. Leo's top G, man. He's the best. He's
top G.
he's kind of the wacky uncle to the trio. Now, unfortunately, but the first issue is an introduction. I've written issues 2 and 3, and I cannot wait for more Leo. Let me just say that. He's just fun. He's kind of comedic relief in a lot of ways. Genius. He's going to play a huge role in the series, but he also got sucked into this mess.
So do you like to write? Do you have the most fun with Mary because she has quick wit and an attitude that can kind of like get away with a little bit more with her?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I it's fun because you can, juxtapose the Vincent Van Gogh, who's very shy and timid and doesn't feel accepted by humanity or, you know, by anyone. And then he gets thrust into Mary's life or into a relationship with Mary where they start being able to interact. And she's very friendly and outgoing and very outspoken. And so it's been fun kind of just allowing them to talk with each other. And then things like that. So it's been
fun. When you're at the restaurant and you get an order, something you didn't order, and you don't want to say anything to the waitress, so your girlfriend does for you.
She'll speak up. Yeah.
So right here, of course, this is a gorgeous cover. So this is the standard. This is cover A.
Yes.
Okay. So we are looking at the sunflowers, and of course, this was Vincent Van Gogh's thing, right? He loved sunflowers.
Loved sunflowers. Yeah. And this is a wraparound cover, and you will not see the other half until you get the book. But this is a wrap. So the standard is wraparound. So it's dual sided.
And it looks like we have his canvas, his painting supplies, his hat, you know, broken, falling down right here. So I'm wondering what's on the other end of that wraparound.
Yeah, you'll find out.
We have the propaganda edition. So cover B.
Mm-hmm.
And right here, this was the cover that I've seen before. And we have just the trio looking at a self-portrait of Vincent Van Gogh right here. And of course, this was replicated by your artist, right?
No, that I don't know if I did touch on that. So we do not use AI art, right? No AI art. Mm-hmm. That's AI art. And the only reason for it is to make fun of it. And I was like, this is the only moment we're going to use AI art, because I basically just put in Vincent Van Gogh, a self-portrait, because he did do a self-portrait of it like this. It looks very similar, only actually like Vincent Van Gogh and not like a dog man.
Yeah.
So
I was gonna say, it looks like he kind of got punched in the nose a little.
Yeah. So I like how off it is. It's just off enough to be funny. And then you got a Leo over there looking at Vincent. And I mean, Leo only speaks Italian. He doesn't speak English, right? He speaks Italian, Latin, a bunch of other languages. So obviously he wouldn't be able to necessarily interact very well. So he's just saying, who's this in Italian? So that's what that is.
And we also have some binary code right here too.
Sure do.
And did I ask last time, like, what this meant?
That specifically doesn't have any big particular meaning, but in the comic book, and actually, if you want to scroll up, you'll see it a little bit. Go right to the covers, just the little header that I put for covers. Go up a little more, a little bit more, right there. Do you see behind the word covers? There's a little faint, basically code there. So yeah. that's everywhere. I love Easter eggs. Ooh. That's kind of the universal language in the future. We created a universal language. That
you have these little codes that are hidden like throughout the pages?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's awesome,
here,
Chris.
And you'll be able to decipher them eventually.
Dude, oh man, I love little Easter eggs like that. Has that been something that you just kind of like were fond of, like when you were reading comic books yourself, or like what inspired that?
Anything, entertainment medium, games, you know, movies, comic books. I love myself a good Easter egg. You throw an Easter egg at me, I get excited. I'll do like YouTube dives of like Halo Easter eggs and stuff like that on games. And yeah, so I'm a big fan, and they're going to be everywhere.
I also love like how distinct their clothing styles are from each of their own like respective eras.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, like their eras, but also their status too, because George wasn't exact, or yeah, Vincent Van Gogh wasn't exactly the most wealthiest person.
No, he died broke, and it shows. So, and then Leo was pretty predominant where he was with his stature. You know, he was doing well, and then Marie came from a fairly wealthy family, I believe, in New York, and she traveled to Paris and stuff, and so yeah, it kind of represents them decently.
And then we have, of course, the Starry Nightmare edition too. So was there ever like a nightmare vision of it, like edition of Starry Night, or was this something that you had created just for this comic?
No, just Starry Night. So Vincent Van Gogh made Starry Night. Everyone should be fairly familiar with that. There is a page in the book that obviously I've not shown anywhere where Vincent gets a good look at the AI hellscape in front of him. He gets, it's just a full page of just the world. And I had the idea of it'd be cool if what would happen if he painted this, because this is a starry nightmare. So it'd be just a play on words there. So I hired an artist. I worked with an artist, Alreza Magadam. I am not very good at his last name, but anyway, he's a world renowned artist. He's very good at Van Gogh's art style. That's what I looked up. Just, I wanted to find someone who could capture Van Gogh's art style. That way it looks like something he would actually paint. So worked with him to create this one-of-a-kind painting.
So we have his hat right here, but it looks like some other interesting symbolism. It looks like the middle of the town, there's like some water kind of seeping in that leads into this road. And then this item right here, can you give us a little bit about like what's going on?
Yeah, so this is another instance of me saying, hey man, you're creative, do something cool. You know what I mean? Like almost the equivalent of someone telling Tony Hawk to do a kickflip. I'm like, do something, bro. And so he did, though. And that was the cool. I gave him some decent direction on what I was wanting. And I gave him obviously the page from the comic book. I said, here's what it is. Make this Van Gogh. That's kind of all I said. And then he did a lot of symbolism. And I'm looking at it, and I was like, well, this doesn't really look like it. And I was like, but then we started talking about it. I was like, oh, okay. I really like it. Because like the waterfall that's spilling out, when you get to see the, this shouldn't give too much away, but basically the AI city is filled with light. There's wires and cords and just vibrant, bright lights everywhere. There's glowing blue from this city. And Vincent wouldn't have any familiarity with that at all. It would literally look like a waterfall taking over a city. And when he said that to me, I was like, yes, it would. I was like, this is great. I love it. So it's basically the center part of the metropolis is this weird tower that he's seeing in front of him that he painted. And then the light that just spills out and kind of takes over the city is the waterfall.
I also really like how like the moon or the sun, like right here, is like cracked. It looks like it's kind of like broken. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a blood moon going on. The sky's bright red. Yeah. There's the drones. There's like robotic drones flying through the air. And that's actually what he's interpreting as the stars because it just looks like bright lights. It was just
Wow.
I feel like it needs more love than it got because it's really cool.
This is gorgeous. So here's a look at some of the previews without text so we can get a better understanding of some of these interiors too. And I just love the symbolism. You said your artist did a great job, and he really did. Like, we see, like, for this, you know, instance right here, just the use of yellow, which was Vincent Van Gogh's favorite color, you know, kind of like how it dabbled out right there. You know, the yellow flower in his pocket right there. Man, this is gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing that that Gabriel did. There was tons of moments where he's like, I made this yellow and this color because it symbolizes this. And I was like, I'm just blown away by it. So yeah.
It's like, how would I have included that in my script? Like,
no, there was no way. And that's why I told him, I was like, I love it. I was like, you're only improving this story with every little thing you're putting into it.
And then, I think before you said, he liked to look into the lights, right? That's kind of what this, was a symbolism for.
Yeah. He found that nighttime was better than daytime. That's paraphrasing an actual quote from him. But he said that he preferred it. He said he actually thought it was brighter. And it kind of, I wanted to show this as he's drudging through the rain, just having a couple negative interactions. And he takes a moment to look up at the night sky and just smiles, you know, just sees what Vincent Van Gogh sees.
And I love the way this bottom panel, it just like kind of like breaks, bleeds into like the outside of the paneling, like not a traditional square. It kind of like just waves out there. It's gorgeous.
That's another cool thing that Gabriel did. I was like, I love it. I was like, don't box in. I was like, let's be kooky. Let's be cool.
And then right here's a little self insert too of our main man of the hour. That, you know, when you said that, and I put two and two together, I was like, dude, this is awesome.
The Easter eggs have begun.
And then this was a big thing we fixated on last time too, the lettering, the sound effects, like the slam and the way this word bubble broke apart. Such an awesome detail.
Yeah, I can only give him credit. I would love to be like, that was my idea. No.
And then you were talking about the day's night. That's this page in particular.
This page, it's probably one of my favorite pages in the comic book.
And the use of the negatives, like right here, his desk is just white.
I love it. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, this is another one that I wrote it as in. So this is Vincent Van Gogh writing a letter to his brother Theo. So I actually read a handful of his published letters that people had found to his brother Theo so I could get an idea of how he spoke, how he interacted with his brother through this medium. So that was really fun. He has a lot of little quirky things he likes to say. So like one thing is he ends the letter with sincerely with a handshake. And it's kind of weird, but to the point where my wife was looking over, I was asking her to just proof it. And I was like, make sure this looks good. You know, the writing's good. And she goes, why does it say sincerely with a handshake? That doesn't make any sense. And I was like, ask Vincent. I don't know. That's what, and I showed her like a letter that he had done that in. So I was trying to be as true to form as I possibly could be with like this section, but this is another one. I was just like, okay, it's a day, just a day scene of him writing. And my artist took it as a whole night and day cycle of just like kind of tormenting over his life into this letter to his brother. And I was like, it's amazing.
No, that's gorgeous. And I, you know, that ending it with the handshake, You know, I'm curious on why he would do that. You know, a handshake is like a nice like form of respect, right? Maybe that's what he was trying to intend.
Yeah, and it was to his brother, so I don't know if there's like an aspect of being formal or informal with that. All I know is this is how he wrote, and I was like, that's interesting.
And then here we get a good look of how, you know, his everyday actions walking through the marketplace. Man, these interiors are gorgeous. The way the speech bubbles just kind of like drift through like that is just beautiful too. Was this your artist's first like major like comic book or
100%. Wow. So this was his first time ever doing a comic book, and we'll embarrass him even more. Last day we finished the comic book, and we get through with everything. Lettering's done, coloring's done, everything's done, it's organized. And we had ourselves a little emotional moment. Well, I mean, he did mostly, but he just said, he's like, I never thought I would do a comic. He's like, and then we did a comic. And he was just like, he's like, I'm sorry I'm emotional, but this is just like everything I've always wanted to do. And he goes, and I love how it turned out. So he's like very proud of himself and happy. So it was just really cool.
I love this in particular. So right here is a good example of what I was talking about. Like right here, this is so lively. The colors in this, I mean, we have a lot of use of yellow, but it's warm, you know, the palettes are warm feeling. And then right here, you know, it is, it's like, it feels like a whole different style, like with just like the art, but it's like a darker palette, it feels, if that makes sense. Like it's more red than it is yellow.
Yep.
And I just thought that was such an interesting, like, cause the feeling you get when reading that, you know, there's so much that goes into this. It was just such an awesome experience. Now these, AI look hideous. Give us a little bit about some of their design. Are they like zombies? What's going on with these guys?
So yeah, we have multiple different types. We're not necessarily indulging all of that until further issues. That way you can kind of get an idea, because we're going to introduce multiple different types, but almost like a video game-esque. But yeah, so you have like your drones, the regular like zombie-esque AI people, which basically they have a chip. And that controls all motor function, all thinking abilities, but they're just base human. And that's going to be your guy, your chubbier guy on the right, and then like the scrawnier, creepy guy on the left. The guys with the screens are actually, they're called Watchers. So those, they have more of a direct line with the tower. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it.
I freaking love, like his word bubbles are yellow, like wow. And then right here, this panel, his arm with the gun is what breaks.
That's another thing Gabriel did. And I, gorgeous. And he was like, do you like this? I was like, I freaking love it. I was like, that's such a cool way to do that. I was like, I don't even know how you did that. And so yes, it's really cool.
Gorgeous. And like, this goes to show you how different it looks. So this is the propaganda version. This is going to be mostly gray.
Yeah, so propaganda. I wanted a black and white version. I don't know if you've noticed that a lot of comic books, especially indie comic books, will have different versions. Some will have a black and white version. I really liked the idea of a black and white version, mainly because Gabriel's art looks great in black and white. Like we just tested it. I was like, holy crap, it looks good that too. We don't even need color. I was like, I really want to do a black and white version. So we definitely need to do it. And then as we were discussing it, I was like, you know what? Let's one up everybody. I was like, let's give it more love. I was like, have you ever seen Sin City or anything like that where you got the black and white and then a pop of red? And it just, there's something about it that's almost like it should be on like those oddly satisfying YouTube videos. It's like, this just looks good and feels good. This like thing that you can draw your eye to that's slightly different than the rest. Anyway, so I pitched him on that idea. I was like, how hard would it be to make everything black and white, and then we'll pick little things that are important to each scene.
God, this is
to be colorful. And I love it. I love how it turned out.
This is gorgeous.
So yeah, so like not every page has it, but all speech bubbles are going to be colored. Small little things are going to be colored that we want your eyes to be drawn to. So that's kind of what we try to accomplish with this.
So you listen to a lot of deep dives on YouTube. Did you ever listen to the ones about Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Each character is associated with like a primary color.
Yeah. I love that stuff.
It is so mind boggling. Like, cause each color is like a representation of like where they're at. Like Walter White during the season where the airplane crashes was wearing a lot of pink. You know what I mean? Yep. And then like later seasons, he's wearing green. and like Saul Goodman wears a lot of blue. Like, dude, it's like, and there's a science to it, like a human, like psychological science to it.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to do in some aspects. So like Vinny's, and his name's Vinny, and that's mainly because that's who, what Marie calls him, is Vinny. So Vinny's primary color is going to be yellow, obviously. Marie's color is going to be more of a blue. And then Leonardo da Vinci is going to be more of a green. So we have little bits of that in our comic.
And man, right here too, when you have the AI screen, you know, colored in, that is just, that's awesome.
I truly love how it turned out. Yeah.
This is gorgeous. So right here again is the link. Let's go over some of these rewards, guys. Let's see what you get by backing this awesome book. So let me scroll up and we'll have it just set on this beautiful image right here. And we have $2 or more, you get the standard edition digitally. This is probably the absolute cheapest I've ever seen for a PDF. Holy crap.
Yeah, get it.
How many pages?
32.
Wow. So $2 for a 32 page book. You guys have nothing to lose. Like, oh my God, why do it so cheap?
I don't know. I wanted to separate the two mainly because I think it's worth the physical. So the physical, there's a, and for people who haven't created a comic before, obviously this is my first, but I've been in touch with a lot of people who have, there's a lot that goes into a physical. So the price point on it being pretty high is just kind of what it needs to be. But for a PDF, I want the point of entry to be lower. You know, if you want to read it, you want to enjoy it, read it. You know, you get it a little cheaper. That's fine. Because I mean, there's no shipping costs. There's no anything like that. Just, you get a, you know, hopefully, you know, high quality comic for a cheap price.
I love that so much because, like, I was talking to a friend the other day about, like, video games, how they do, like, the digital at the same price as the physical.
There's no reason for that. It's mind-boggling, and it pisses me off.
Yeah. It's like, dude, the physical is going to chill on my bookshelf. Like, if this console, like, goes under in 5 years, I'll never get that digital back.
No. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. That's fine.
And then we have the propaganda edition for $2 as well. So if you want to see that in black and white with touches of specialized color here and there, $2, another great price right there. And then the Starry Nightmare edition as well for $2. So does the Starry Nightmare edition have any other differences within it outside of the regular edition?
Not much within it. It's primarily a specialized cover, specialized back cover. So, yeah, that's primarily all it is.
And then we have the collector bundle digital, so you can get all three of those for $5. So you even save a dollar doing that. I'm loving these prices already, Chris. Holy crap. We have the standard edition for $12. I was here. I was thinking that the physical was going to be $20, $30, $12. Still an outstanding price for the physical. You said it was 32 pages?
32 pages, yeah.
Gorgeous, man. And then we have the propaganda for just $3 more at $15.
And the only reason we did that, I was originally just going to make it 12 because we were just going to make it black and white. But then when we took so much time picking out the very special things we want colored, everything, there, a lot of love went into propaganda. So, yeah, I think it's worth it.
And then we have the Starry Night edition at $20 or more. And that's going to get you that C cover as well. Collector's bundle. So if you want to get all three of those, $40. So holy crap, an outstanding price right there too. For your first Kickstarter, man, these prices are awesome. These are some very competitive prices, man.
Yeah, gotta be competitive.
And then that's it, guys. So be sure to hop on. You only have 15 days to back this awesome project. And man, I had the chance to read it. I can't wait to read it again though, after seeing some of the, you know, that you finished it. I want to check out this propaganda edition. This looks gorgeous.
I can't wait to get in my own hands, to be honest.
Yeah. So after going through that Kickstarter and checking out all those tiers, what would you like to say to anyone who might be on the fence about backing?
Get off the fence. It's going to be good. I think you'll like it. A lot of time, energy, and love went into this. We have big plans for it. We have many, many issues. We have a full-length story full of twists and turns and very unique characters that I cannot wait to have to show everyone. So, I think you'll really like it. I honestly do.
No, and, you know, as someone who's read it, I will double up and say I think you guys will love it, too. It definitely gets the Keeping It Geekly badge of approval. So you said you had the scripts written for issue 2 and issue 3. Any idea when those can be expected to drop or release?
Not necessarily. This is a little behind the curtain, but it costs a lot of money to make these when you're doing it on your own. You know, this is a dream of mine, kind of, you know, a dream project. So obviously this first one was fully funded by me, just my savings account. All went into this, paying the artist what he needed to be paid, when he needed to be paid, ethically treated artists. And then issue 2, I'm really hoping obviously making enough to continue it with the Kickstarter. That's my goal. So otherwise I'll try and bankroll it as much as I can. And at the bottom of the Kickstarter, it says, and I mean this, I plan to take no funds from this. Nothing goes into my savings account. That's already been spent. I don't need to recoup that. The whole point of this is to allow me to keep writing, is so that I can do issue 2, issue 3, issue 4, issue 12.
Ooh, so maybe. We have an ongoing series, or is that issue
12? I have about 8, maybe. I have a roadmap for 8, but and this is something I've said before, I really don't like boxing myself in. Mm-hmm. So I have kind of like A, B, and C of like what it is, and then while I'm writing it, I might just go off in a tangent and then almost like a side quest for the characters that at least does have some importance to the main story, but would be entertaining and enjoyable to go on. So I don't box myself in. So roadmap for 8 could turn into 12.
And I'm excited for this. So outside of Artificial, what else are you working on, Chris? You know, what else is coming out of Bent Box Comics for 2023?
Something I'm almost more excited about than Artificial that I haven't talked to anyone about yet, really, or publicly. My artist, Gabriel, and I are, because he's not allowed to work with anyone else, he's stuck with me. We're working on a psychological horror series, comic book called Sundown. It's basically about I don't know how much I want to give it away. But
like,
it's basically about a retired superhero who is starting to show early signs of Alzheimer's.
Dude!
And I am enjoying writing this so much, and I can't describe how much I can't wait to have it out. But I'll give you the nugget of nugget of inspiration was actually an article I read about 2 years ago that said, hey, I think like the title was, hey, you know those superheroes you love? Yeah, they probably have dementia now. And I was like, what? And so I read into it, and it broke down the psychological toll and the mental toll that powers would have on a not like alien-esque superhero, but like a human that was super, and how it 99% of the time would break down the mental capabilities. And they would start suffering from dementia and have hallucinations and not know who they are or who anyone's around them anymore. And I was like, that sounds so sad and very interesting.
That sounds like it'd be such a wild ride, but I would almost like counter, like, wouldn't they have like super mental capabilities, you know?
Yeah, well, it depends on your type of superhero. So like you obviously have like Wolverine. Wouldn't he be able to just regenerate brain cells? Hey, you know, we are talking about just superheroes, and then shoving like science into it. It's like, but what about this? Yes, I'm sure. I guess Wolverine would be able to just regenerate his brain. It wouldn't deteriorate.
I'm that guy in the comics. Really, like, well, actually,
that's the thing. I don't really know. So I took it in a slightly. It's not Wolverine, but I took it in more of a Omni-Man type character. But it's similar, but anyway, so that is the type of character that, you know, super strength, can fly, and now he's losing touch of reality. And what happens when someone who can just laser beam an entire city doesn't know where he is or who anyone is and thinks he's under attack?
You know, that gives me Logan vibes a little bit, like where Professor Xavier was like losing his mind, and it would freeze, like part in the hotel in particular where he has his attack and like everybody can't breathe, and like, you know what I mean, like that was such that added such a layer to Heroes that hasn't been explored. So I love that you are finding these little hidden pockets and blowing them up, man. Such an awesome idea. Such an awesome idea. For everyone watching, right here is the link to Artificial. Be sure to check this out one last time. It is New Comic Book Day. Treat yourself, all right? For $12 for a physical, this is one hell of a bang for your buck. Chris, you've been on the show before. You know the drill. I always love asking for a little bit of advice when we go to end the show. So for anyone that is watching, looking to contact an artist for the first time, what would be some of your advice to make sure that interaction goes smoothly? Like, what are some of the do's and don'ts of, your first time encounter with an artist?
That's actually a good question. I didn't say this last time, but it just popped into my head. Don't have pride. Pride is a killer. Self-confidence, that's all nice and fun and dandy. But when you start interacting with someone new and you want to build a relationship with them, show your flaws, questions, anything like that. Because that was something that I was, you definitely get that. I know just as much as you do kind of thing. And then when you're trying to react, you're trying to interact with someone who also knows comics. You don't want to start bickering and fighting, and you want to kind of try and find common ground and be able to interact in a way that doesn't have self-esteem involved. So like that, it just popped in my head, but that is something that I've always done whenever interacting with new people. I put pride to the side. I know nothing. You know everything. Let's talk. And so that's normally how I go about it. So it was, and it's very rare you're going to have a bad interaction if you go in it with that mindset.
Yeah, I think, when you are trying to do a collaboration, you want to be friends, right? You don't want to interaction off like, no, actually, I have a permit here that says I can do what I want. Like, you don't want that type of energy. Yeah. You want to have, you want to encourage and blossom a friendship, because a friendship is going to get what you want to get and get it better, right? Like, if you're on friendly terms 100%. With your artist, that's going to make that project turn out better and better. So, Chris, awesome advice. Once again, thank you so much for swinging by. Everyone watching, there is a link. Be sure to check out this awesome project today. That being said, it is time for us to wrap up. I hope you all have a lovely Wednesday afternoon, but most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.